T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Wherever and whenever you're listening, it's probably beer o'clock, and we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you right here on the podcast starting right now.
Welcome back into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris, and it has been a very long time since we have been out on location, but we are once again out on location for a podcast takeover. Now, this is a place that we have, slobbered over for the entirety of the 70-some episodes of this podcast, and we've had some of their beers on the podcast before. You have been to both locations.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to just this one, and I love the food. I love the beer, and we got an interview today. I'm very excited. We are at Von Ebert in the Pearl District for the episode today. It's been, I want to say it's been like 3 months since we last went out on location for this, maybe even more.
It's been a while, and we kind of talked about it last week, and I was like, I got time Sunday afternoon. I'm going to call somebody. Like, I'm just going to like make this happen. I really, really wanted to get somewhere. Plus, I think it'd be really fun, like, right around the holidays, too. It's kind of like, oh, I listened to the Beers on Us podcast, and they were at Von Ebert, and that place sounds really cool. Maybe we should go there. So, I don't know. Maybe it was an idea to give you guys kind of a place to go.
If you have yet to be
If you have yet to be here, or if you just got family in town, you want to take them somewhere, I thought it'd be fun to find a spot that we really enjoy and come on down here. And, you know, I've got a good buddy, Sam, who works here, who'll come on the podcast later. And so I just kind of reached out and was like, yo, can we do this? He was like, come on down.
And then you said, you texted me after you set it up, and you're like, hey, can you do this? And I was like, well, I can, but do we have the equipment to
yes,
do it?
Yes.
And it was literally like a day and a half process to figure out if we had the equipment. You texted me update, which is never something that you text me. I'm usually really on it.
Yeah.
And you were like, probably like, hello,
yeah.
I need to make sure I'm doing this. But yeah, we figured it out. We got our stuff out here, and we are ready to go for the podcast. If you are listening to a podcast takeover for the first time, it's been a while, so it might be the case. Hello. And the way we do this...
I'm Patrick.
I'm Mike. Hi, Patrick. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
What we do on these location episodes is we do 3 different segments. We do the first segment where we have beer and food, and we talk about the beer that we're drinking. We talk about the ambiance of the place, the location, and we talk about the quality of the food. We have the guest who comes on, and then we keep him here for the beer of the week, and then we'll drink our beer of the week with him.
Yep.
Based on either the beers that we have tried or a beer that he's really liking right now. And that's kind of how these location podcasts go. You can find us everywhere, mostly. You can find us Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Omni, 1080thefan.com, radio.com. Social media, Instagram.com/beersonus is where we post our beer pictures. I just posted one from here with the equipment and the Von Ebert beer in the background. So you'll be seeing that on, you probably already have seen it if you're listening to this later in the week. And then personal pages, I'm at Mike Lynch 27 on Twitter and Patrick Zappi Diddy 085 on Instagram. You will see what my weekend beer was on the Instagram page that I posted. I was on staycation last week. Remember, we posted an episode on Monday.
Got it early.
I was on staycation, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, know what? A, I've been sitting at home for the last 3 days, so I'd like to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And B, I want to have some special beer because it's rare for me to get that much time off in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to John's, and I picked up 8 beers.
Nice.
And it's all in the picture right there for you. I think the picture is 9. I had one of them already in the fridge, and the other 8 is what I got. And so far, I've had about half of them. I purchased 2 Bale Breaker beers. I had the Sown and Grown, which is a new IPA series they're doing, which I guess is the whole point is probably all stuff that they have there at the farm that they're putting it right back into the beer or something.
Yeah,
it didn't really explain on the can.
It kind of reminds me, I think it's something similar to what Rogue has done. They have their like farm to fresh or something like, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but Rogue does this thing where all ingredients in the beer are grown by them. And I don't know, I don't want to speak for Bale Breaker, but I think it's something similar to that. Like we're using all of our own, obviously they have the hop farm right there, but I think they're trying to use all their own ingredients as well. That beer is phenomenal.
Yeah, I had that one and that was really good. I was like, oh yeah. Because when I was there, I saw release number 1 and I was like, this would be cool to try each release of this.
Yeah.
So let me start with number 1. It was really good.
Me and the Cerveza kids have been slobbering all over that one.
Yeah, do you guys have that on tap there, or is it just in cans?
It was just in cans. Yeah. I just roll in, and if something's not talking to me on the tap list, you just crack, Crack another can.
I also got the Dormancy Breakfast Stout from Bale Breaker. It was solid. It's not my favorite stout. I won't lie about that, but it was solid. I haven't actually seen a lot of dark beers from them, so I was interested to try it. Definitely had a little bit of the coffee flavor, hence the breakfast stout. I got the Bend Brewing and Bowie combo, the Export Pilsner, the Windward Export Pilsner. And holy cow, the food just came. Thank you.
Goodness gracious.
Those steak fries are steak fries.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to die.
I had the Bend Brewing Bowie Windward Export Pilsner. I've had that one. Very easy drinking, crushable, tasty Pilsner.
I love the can. It's like a little red, white, and bluish. And
it's both a Bend and a Bowie can in one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's what it looks like. It looks like the Bowie IPA can. That's why I was like,
but
that looks
cool.
But it's
got the Bend lines on
top.
I got both Freem barrel-aged porters. I got the maple barrel-aged smoked porter and the rum barrel-aged porter. I've had the maple one so far. Very good. I have not had a lot of barrel-aged dark beers from Freem, so when I saw those, I was like, oh, yes, I need to get them.
Those Freem kids and their barrel beer, man. They're all about it.
I got a Zeugelhaus Delight Schwarz beer. Yet to drink that one. Very cool can, though. I got the Stormbreaker Winter Coat. Have yet to drink that. I got the Crux Tough Love, which last year was my favorite barrel-aged Imperial Stout. By far my favorite. So I got that in a smaller bottle this year. And then I did try the Bowie Decapitator Barrel-Aged Doppelbock.
Ooh, holla.
Because I had never seen a barrel-aged Doppelbock before. It was so interesting. It was, I mean, it's everything you want in a barrel-aged beer. You kind of get some of the alcohol flavor. You get some of the woody flavor from the barrel. But so much lighter. Because it's a Doppelbock.
Yeah.
It's not a heavy stout. It's not a porter. It was kind of hard to explain. It was a really unique experience drinking it. So if you see it on the shelf somewhere, I would recommend grabbing that. So that was my weekend beer. I had a lot of those beers at home, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, my weekend beer isn't as exciting. I mean, did a lot of stuff, did a lot of work, saw Star Wars a lot. So it wasn't...
We alluded to that on Monday. You've seen it four times.
Yeah. I had a Modelo at the movie theater on Thursday.
Okay. Hey, Modelos aren't bad.
No, I enjoyed it.
You had a Negro Modelo or a...
Just the regular Especial. Funny enough, on Wednesday, the first time I saw it, I drank three cans of Agostini Pils from Von Ebert Brewing.
Oh, yeah?
Because I'm obsessed with this beer.
That's where you got the idea, huh?
And, actually, Chris Martin dropped off some Agostini Pils for us, and I was supposed to give you some, but I drank it all. So I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. We're having some right now.
So I owe you some. I owe you some beer. And let's see, what else did I do? I drank a newer IPA from Grains of Wrath and Ripsaw. Again, complete coincidence. It has nothing to do with why we're here. But I also tried the Haze Hop, which is the pale ale, the hazy pale ale from Von Ebert. Not bad. I kind of enjoyed it.
All right.
Yeah.
We're finding some hazes that are sitting well with you.
I'm working on it. Outside of that, I'm actually just really excited to be here right now. It's Sunday as we're recording this.
Sunday.
We're, you know, in the Pearl, so, you know, parking's a nightmare down here, and everyone's out. It seems very festive, and football's on the TV, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It's a happy Sunday.
It is a nice
especially
Sunday.
Before I have to go to work.
Yeah, this is the end of my staycation. I'm counting this as my staycation still, but... I did my show this morning, and now I'm doing this. So technically it's work, but not really. But it's been a very nice week of literally – I did almost nothing this last week, and it was glorious. Sometimes that's the best, just especially if you've been busy just sitting down, played a lot of Call of Duty. I watched a lot of YouTube, a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies, and just chilled. It was very nice.
I just got to get to the new year. Once I get to the new year, I'm going to be home free.
We have a show tomorrow, too.
Oh, we do? Yeah, yes. That is true. I forgot.
Well, 4 days ago by the time you're listening to this. But Monday the 23rd, we had a show together on the radio.
I heard it went phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really good, right? Man, we're superstars. Anyway, so Von Ebert, this is where we are right now. The food and the beer is here. They were out of the Agostini Pils on tap, and they were nice enough to get us a can and pour us half into each glass. This is the first time I've had a chance to try the Agostini Pils. Oh, my God.
Right.
I don't know if I've had a Pilsner as flavorful as this one, because Pilsners to me are they're very light, they're easy drinking, they
tend to be bready,
I was
doughy
gonna say,
kind of thing,
like a bready, buttery kind of just simple, not butter flavor, but just kind of that mindset of like a very simple, low flavor profile, easy to drink beer. There's so much flavor in this beer. I don't even know where to start. I know on the tap list it explains to you some of the flavors. It says
orange peel, spearmint. Verdant?
I don't know what that is, but...
Look at us. We're not that smart.
I also don't know what makes this an Italian Pilsner, but it's delicious. So, more people do Italian Pilsners, please.
I believe it has something to do with the malt. Because I think I've asked people, and because it was like a popular thing, I want to say, over the summer. A bunch of people, you know, I think the Wayfinder kids made an Italian pills. I know Natalie at our Decom pub, Breakside Decom, she did an Italian pills. And, you know, I think it was just kind of like a thing there for a minute. But I never really got quite an answer. Maybe Sam can help us out with that. But I love this beer. I think the hop character on it is so unique. It's so fruity yet floral at the same time. I love light lagers. Like, I'm a big Helles lager drinker. I'm a big Vienna lager drinker because I like those flavors. I'm not – it's funny because Vienna, you get, like, biscuity kind of flavors, but I don't love the bready, doughy kind of flavor in Pilsner. It's just not my cup of tea. So this beer, I get very kind of low levels of that, and I get very high levels of hop character, and it just works so well for me. If you go back – over the summer, there was an episode where I just was gushing over this beer.
Yes.
I went out to the Glendevere spot for the first time, and they had it on draft, and it was, yeah, it was in the summer, and I was like, oh, it's Italian Pilsner thing. Oh, we'll just see what Sean's brewing out here and taste this. And I tasted it, and I was like, this is incredible. I had two of them.
It is. I'm having a really hard time describing it because it almost reminds me of like a good stout where there's layers of flavor every time you take a sip. Because this one, it starts off. And, I mean, thankfully the menu is here and tells me orange peel because it does. That is the first flavor I get, is a very, very distinct citrusy, but not like lemon zest, not like Citra hop. It tastes like it tastes like a fresh orange a little bit like an orange peel. But then it kind of mellows out a little bit from that, and it maybe it's the spearmint flavor they talk about in there. I'm not really sure, but there's something else that comes in after that, and then it kind of smooths out again. It's layers and layers of flavor.
Yeah, well done, guys. This is a cool one. It's now in cans, and you can kind of get it anywhere where you get your cans, especially if you can come down. If you're downtown doing some shopping, swing in, pick up a four-pack. This beer's really great. It's really cool, and I'm really excited to talk to Sam about kind of the packaging situation they've got going on here, because this is in cans. The Volatile Substance IPA, which is kind of their house IPA here, is in cans, and now the Haze Hop is in cans. I'm just curious how that's going, because this beer should be flying off the shelves, in my opinion.
I do wonder, though, if is it intimidating to people when they see Italian Pilsner versus just like regular Pilsner, or does that not make a difference?
I don't know, man. I mean, the common consumer is so removed from me. Like, in terms of, like, how I see the shelf. Like, I see Italian pills, and I'm like, what's that?
Yeah.
To where some people's like, I don't know what the hell that is. I'm out of
here. Yeah, Italians? This is America.
This is America.
All right, so what beers do you have in front of you in the taster? You already finished one of them.
What do you got? I have the Pierre Lachat, which is their French Pilsner in Italian style. I don't know what that means.
I also have that one.
But it is a beer made out of the Glendevere spot, which is cool. The menu is kind of coded in a way that you can tell what's brewed here and what's brewed there. I got that beer, and I finished that.
Strawberry leaf, hayloft, and lemon peel.
It tastes like a strawberry cream beer.
Yeah,
but
it
not
does.
Like overpowering.
Yeah, it's a very mild cream flavor.
But it's got this kind of cool, nice, creamy flavor to it that I've kind of enjoyed.
Well, and it says hayloft. So is that supposed to make me believe that I'm in a barn drinking it, and it's like that smell of like all of the hay?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm in. I don't know. People just write these things.
Well, I know, but they're supposed to help.
I guess. Then I've got a certain demon poetry. Right? Am I reading that right? Yeah. A smoked Vienna lager, which I just took a sip of, but it was after some truffle fries, so my palate was straight dominated and just had beer. And then I got I Should Have Been a Cowboy, which is a session IPA with Chinook and Enigma hops that I have not tried yet. I did take a shot at a hazy, you know, I'm trying to learn here. Atmospheric Phenomenon. I ventured towards this one because of the hops that it has listed. Mandarina, Bavaria, Strata. I like Mandarina, Bavaria a lot. And Strata,
I don't know if I've heard of that one before.
It's used a lot in more, it's actually used in a lot more like lagers and stuff. I don't see it a ton in IPAs, but the haze craze has kind of opened up to use different hops in there. Strata, which is, you know, one of my favorite hops of 2019. And then Galaxy. And Galaxy is like the hazy hop right now. I mean, everybody that wants to make hazy IPAs, I feel like, are using a lot of Galaxy. And
I wonder why that is.
I think it's just creating that juicy, soft kind of tropical flavor that everybody wants. And that's been kind of the craze. So I gravitated to that because that's got a hop that I love that's untraditional, a new age hop that's really killing it in hoppy beers, and the kind of trend right now to kind of, you know, just to see if I am going to get into it.
And you got one that I almost got, Haptic Reality. That one looks very interesting.
Yeah, I wanted to get, it's a mixed culture, fooder aged heritage beer, which I'm not sure what that is, with Idaho 7 fresh hops. But it was made out of Glendevere, and I trust Sean's mind and that kind of stuff, so I'm interested in how it goes.
Yeah, I was very interested in that. I didn't choose it for my own taster tray, but I was looking at the menu going, oh. So it's a sour beer, right? Mixed culture, right? It'll be sour, most likely.
Could be sour. Could just be a little funky.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to be tart.
But it's in that realm of beer, I guess,
sure,
is the way I was looking at it. So I'll be curious once you get to that one. I have the, of course, Volatile Substance, which is one of the best beers that's here. One of the more popular beers, I should say. I have also the Pierre Lachat, which I told you about. I got the Googly Eyes, which is Dr. Googly Eyes, which is a red IPA, which is an old faithful for me. I love getting the old red IPAs with Amarillo, Citrus, Chinook hops, flavors candy peel, berry, and orange honey. I got the Axe to Grind, which was a pale ale with Citrus, Simcoe, Amarillo, El Dorado hops, and then topped it off with the American Stout as my final beer, which is American Stout with Oregon-grown Chinook. I also, before you got here, because I got here a little bit early, had myself a pint of the Clubhouse Dark, which is a dark Pacific Northwest lager. Very refreshing for being a dark kind of wintry beer. It was darker in color because I remember, I forget which one I was telling you about. I had a winter beer last week we talked about it on the podcast, and it was very light, and it almost looked like an IPA. This one looked like a dark lager, but it had that kind of fresh IPA, hoppy, bubbly flavor to it. But because it was darker, it also kind of had the warming, what you want when you're drinking in the winter. It was kind of an interesting mix of that. I thought it was really good. So those are the beers that I've got right now. I've tried them all. You go one at a time.
One at a time, guy.
I do sip with some palate cleansing in between.
I mean, everything just tastes like truffle fries.
Well, you got some water.
I'm joking.
I really, really enjoyed the Googly Eyes, the Dr. Googly Eyes,
yeah,
the red IPA. I saw that last time I was here on the menu, but I didn't get it. And I was like, ooh, next time I go, if it's still there, I'm going to get it. So here we are. And I also like the Axe to Grind Pale Ale a lot.
That
one's really good.
I've had that plenty of times. I mean, they've been making that here for a while. I think it's a little ode to the Timbers. This is actually, I probably shouldn't say it, but I will. This is my sneaky pre-funk spot for Timbers games.
Ooh, that's a good spot.
Because I think people think because it's on the opposite side of 405 that it's too far to go to the games. So I'll park in the parking lot, in the parking garage across the street.
Which is super cheap.
It's like $8, $8-$10 for two and a half hours, something like that.
Oh, no. My wife left her car overnight in that garage.
Yeah.
We went to pick it up the next day. $12.
Yeah, you're like, okay.
All right.
And then I come across here and drink, and the place is so big that usually you can find a seat. You know, you can find a seat easily. Grab a couple beers, grab some food if you want. And then the stadium's only like 6 blocks.
Yes.
But I think it's that classic Portland Metro bridge and tunnel mindset where it's like, oh man, dude, that's on the other side of 405. That's too far away. Let's drink at Breakside instead. I'm like, that's 22nd in Raleigh. Like, you can do the math, right?
Yeah.
The stadium's on 18th and Burnside. I don't want to walk that far.
We walk that far.
Yeah, I know. I do it all the time.
Last time we went to the game, we went out to Breakside.
I actually do it all the time.
Yeah.
But this is actually a really great Timber spot because, like I said, the place is so big that you're going to get a spot to sit, and it's good beer, good food, and it's really close to the stadium.
I know you'll hate this, but the last time I went, just the two of us, my wife and I went to the Timbers game, we went to 10 Barrel because we wanted their food, their steak fries there, which are really good. And we didn't know this. We just went there, and we were wearing our Timbers stuff. They give you a deal for wearing Timbers gear there before
Ooh.
The games. It's like they give you like $2 pints or something on Timbers game day if you're wearing Timbers stuff. So just a little stuff there if you want a cheap deal prior to the Timbers game and not spend money in the stadium for
just
beer.
Rotate yourself around
Pearl District.
Around the Pearl District.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, might as well. Backwoods is there. Deschutes is there. Mm-hmm. There's a Rogue there. Just go crazy. Why not?
Get wild.
Food in front of us as well. You got yourself some steak garlic fries, which
truffle fries look
delightful.
It is quite incredible.
And then I got myself, of course, a burger, which I've actually had this burger here before. I also got some truffle fries on the side.
The thing is huge, Michael.
Oh,
it's not that.
It's
big.
Not that.
Not
big.
For you.
No.
For me, I'm like, oh god. I like look at it and I just get scared.
It's a good size burger, but I've also had the Hail to the Pig sandwich here, which is. So good. I almost got it again, but last time I was here, I got it, and I was like, oh, I'll do something different. The food here is really good, too.
The food here is fantastic. They're famous for their wings. The wings are the thing to do here.
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, the wings are the thing to do here. They always have been. Even since it was Fatheads, the wings were always the thing. And I've had the wings a bunch. I just didn't think wings would be good to eat while on a podcast, so I opted not on the wings.
Well, A, your hands would get messy.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of hard to chew, although I'm chewing right now.
Yeah, and we were trying to get this thing fired off and going, so we were ordering beers and I hadn't had the chance. And our wonderful server, she recommended the truffle fries and steak bites. So I was like, let's go. I like that. I'll just trust what you think. They're fantastic. The seasoning is great. It's not too salty, which I'm pretty sensitive to. The truffle oil is not over the top, which is also nice. Because
sometimes
I think
when you get fries like this, it's like, oh, why did I do that?
Yeah, and then there's this like cheese fondue. It's not too greasy. It's not too saucy. It's this is really good.
And I've had they use a lot of pimento cheese here,
which I like
is not a thing that is used often in breweries, I find. So it's nice to kind of get some stuff that has some pimento cheese, which is really cool. And they've got a really good I think it was like a. Oh, we don't have the food menu in front of us. I forget what it was. My wife and I got a poutine, I think it was, here. That was dynamite. We shared it as an appetizer.
I saw poutine on the menu.
Yeah, I think it was that. Oh, boy. That was good, too.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been here, food's really good. And I think the food's been improving, too. When I first came here, I was like, oh, you know, it's good. It's fine. I used to like the Fatheads, like fat sandwich, like big sandwich things. And I was like, oh, that's gone. I kind of like this place for that. Da, da, da. And then I think it's gotten better as the place has continued to exist, for sure. But the beer, I mean, God, it just knocks it out of the park.
I know, and it's really glad. I mean, I'm really happy for this place. When it was Fatheads, you know, Mike Hunsaker was here, you know, good friend of the show. We slurp his beer a lot. And
figuratively and literally.
Figuratively and literally. And Mike was here, and I remember when Fatheads came to town, it was like, who the hell are these guys? These Midwesterners think they're just going to drop on in and make, oh, you make West Coast IPAs? That's cute. Sort of thing. And then Mike built a reputation and things were phenomenal here. And then the franchise lease went up and they shut down, quote, air quotes, of the Fatheads and opened up Von Ebert and snagged some former Commons brewers. And now I think in short time, because I mean, in theory, this brewery is only
3 years old,
yeah. If that. And I mean, it helps that tanks were already in place and things like that, and they hire quality people, so it wasn't like a full build. But this is easily a top 10 brewery in the state. I think it's a top 5 brewery in town.
There you go. One of Patrick's top 10.
There you go.
There it is. All right, so that's going to do it for the food and beer segment. We're going to keep drinking the beer and stuff, and we'll pick beer of the week with Sam when he comes on next. Sam Picaro.
Yes.
Got it. Sam Picaro coming up next here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Welcome back into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris, and we are now joined by Sam, not Picaro, Pecoraro, correct?
That's correct.
Yep. Good, good, good. Okay. He was, Patrick told me Picaro, and I was like, oh, well, he's an idiot. So it's okay.
How long have we known each other?
2 years plus, something like that.
Well, he's an idiot. He said it. He knows.
Well, you're Sam. You're the only Sam I know.
Well, first of all, he told me that we were doing an interview, and he was like, oh, we got a guest. I was like, cool. So I came here, and I was here before he was, and I was like, what's the name of the guy? He didn't even tell me what your name was until we got here.
It's just the homeboy Sam.
Yeah, so you are the head brewer here at the Pearl District location of Von Ebert. There's also a Glendevere location. You said Sean is the head brewer out there, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
So there's so many ways we can start with this. I kind of want to start, were you here when the switch happened from Fatheads?
I started, I believe, a week or two afterwards, correct?
I'm curious about that because when breweries open, it's like new location, new brewer, new setup. Whereas you guys were kind of, not gifted, but it was just like, hey, look, here's a spot. You got a bunch of tanks already set up. You got a huge location. You're in the Pearl District. Did that make it easier? Was it more challenging because you had to try to separate yourself from Fatheads to people who came in? Or how was that process like from your view?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I mean, I guess having everything set up ahead of time was nice. I think the big challenge was, you know, I came in and took the position, had to fill an entire draft list with new beers all of a sudden, where most new breweries have, you know, somebody's working on that for a year or two.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, this kind of happened all at once and, you know, sort of shotgun approach, fill the board and write recipes every day and,
Just make the same beer six times and name it different things.
It's different, trust me.
I guess that would have worked. You should have told me that ahead
of time. Yeah, whoops, sorry, buddy.
Did you take any recipes from the Commons with you or things that you had there that you were doing to help fill that original tap list?
No, there were certainly, you know, SOPs and concepts and different things that I guess, you know, everybody's always inspired by their previous jobs.
Right.
But, No.
It just sounds challenging, so I was like, oh, maybe you brought some stuff over.
Yeah.
I don't have anything right now. I was just kind of listening. I've known Sam for a long time, so I was just I was like curious to hear some of that stuff.
Yeah, we'd probably just repeating conversations.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, well then I'll continue then.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this: in starting in your journey here, what was it like? What was the big thing, like the big shining moment that you kind of were like, oh yeah, I do want to go to Von Ebert's. This is the place I want to be. Because I know Sean's here, and you guys have that old relationship. Is it that part of it? Is it the freedom? What kind of really gravitated to you wanting to come to this spot?
I think there were a lot of things. You know, career-wise, I think this was a, you know, an opportunity that, you know, I hadn't been given before. Also, in my personal life, I live very close to here.
That's nice.
You know, I mean, you know, this is my hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
How about the Pearl District as a location? Because it seems like a great place because there's tourists here and there's a ton of people, but you also have more competition than any small area in the city, as far as I can think of, right? You got Deschutes, you got Backwoods, you got Timber, you got Rogue, all within like three blocks of you. Is that more of a positive to be in the Pearl, or is that create more of a negative because of the competition?
I think it's a very big positive if you're the one on top.
Mm.
So I think like every tourist that comes to the Pearl District knows about Deschutes, and they make great beer. So,
right.
You know, Deschutes is slammed all the time.
Right.
Where, you know, we're a little bit newer brewery, so maybe not everybody knows us. So we're kind of in that, I guess, upward trend, I guess, hopefully.
Did you find that keep staying in this building, but it used to be Fatheads and now you guys are Von Ebert, did that affect the customer base? Did people come in like, hey, where are the Hedwiches? And like, where did that stuff go? Did that cause any sort of negative, or did everyone just kind of go, oh, cool, yeah, it's still great beer, it's still a good place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was positive in a lot of ways, that, you know, people still identified this as a brewery, but
right.
I think a lot of people were maybe a little bit confused, like, oh, are you a brand new brewery? Is it the same brewers? Is it the same beers? You know, we probably could have been better about doing a full stop and saying, yes, like, this is, everything we do here is different, you know, the food's all different, so.
Yeah. Well, let's fast forward to where we are now. Because you guys have been here for, what, 2 years? Three years now?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years at the end of April.
2 years. And I would say, and, you know, part of it could be because the building, you know, it's already kind of established and things are there. But did you foresee this brewery becoming as recognized and popular as it has in the, quote, short time you guys have been around? Because I said this earlier, and I could be a little biased, but, I mean, I think you guys are easy top five in the city, top 10 in the state. I think you guys make fantastic beer here. And you were able to accomplish that in such a short time. And I'm curious, what makes you think you guys were able to get there so quickly?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I know you're a humble
awesome
guy, so I don't mean
so
I don't mean to put you on the spot of like, well, we're awesome because
no,
we
no.
did this.
No, but you guys are awesome.
But you guys have been successful and in a short time. And I'm curious, what enabled you guys to be able to get there so quickly?
Yeah, I think that was like a two-part question. Did I see that coming? I mean, it's so hard to judge yourself from the inside.
Right.
I mean, you know, I feel like we have a ton of work to do on everything. So, but yeah, if you know, the outside perspective is that we're doing well, that's fantastic. And no, I wasn't really concentrated on that, just concentrating on making better beer and, you know, getting the brewery in the right place. I think what helped us get there was getting one of the most talented brewing teams I've ever seen. I mean, we've got, you know, five guys on staff, and every single person has run a brewery before. Jason Hansen came from Santa Darius down in California. Eric Abel and Cameron Murphy both ran Laurelwood at different points. So I think that was, you know, all being on the same page and having a really rad crew.
You've got a small team, but everybody knows what it takes.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Nobody's pissed off about washing kegs.
Yeah. And
that's the hangover day.
Yeah.
That's the secret, Mike. When you're hungover, yeah, you just wash
kegs.
All day.
Oh, it'll be great. Yeah.
I'll just sit back here.
Yeah, I guess to wrap that up, I think we all have really different skill sets, too. Mm-hmm. I think that's what.
And it's just blended really well together.
Yep.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you guys opened the Glendevere location.
That's where I was going, Mike.
Well, great minds think alike, Patrick. just this year, right? Like a couple months ago? Or 6 months ago?
No, it's been more.
So, has it been more?
Because yeah. I went in the summer. It's December.
That's 6 months.
Yeah. So
you said like 2 or 3 months.
Well, I then extended it to 6 months.
No, so we opened up, I might get this wrong by about a month, but I think we opened up around June.
Okay.
June or July of last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But we actually didn't start brewing until January. Mm. So we're coming up on a year of brewing at that location.
That seemed, I mean, to me, as the not guy who worked, or the guy who doesn't work in the beer industry, it seemed really fast to open a second location, considering how new you guys were. How did that process come about, and how much has that helped you so far since the second location has been open?
It was really fast. That's definitely not normal. It was because we got a great opportunity and had an awesome building in a really cool location and just had to jump on it and make it happen. I think if we could go back and do it over, it'd be nice to have a year in between the two, but I think things have turned out nice.
But it's got to be nice. I mean, it's got to be nice to just have two locations, especially here, which probably does a little more. Here does more volume, I would imagine.
Yep, quite a bit more volume, yeah. but quicker turnaround beers.
But it's nice to have that brewery kind of help float you on some extra lines and vice versa, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Send some of your beer out there and vice, and swing that back around.
Well, and it gets people who live out there who don't come out here that often to be aware that Von Ebert exists as a brewery. If you're not seeing it on the shelf or you're not a regular shopper, then it's like, hey, we're here. We live out on the east side. There's a Von Ebert right here. It's perfect.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, more of a blanket statement and not a judgment or anything, but I mean, you and Sean these days tend to be making pretty different beers. How's that relationship in terms of keeping it all under the same hat but being two different styles? I mean, do you guys talk a lot? Do you bounce? I mean, I'm sure you bounce ideas off each other, but do you ever coordinate with each other? Okay, I'm doing this today, you're gonna do that, or these are what we're going forward. How is your relationship right now?
Yeah, so we meet weekly, talk about that. There's not a lot of overlap. They're so focused on, you know, oak and long-term barrel-aged beers out there that doesn't really butt heads with anything we do here. We're more like IPA variant and German-inspired. I'd say that's, you know, at this point probably about 80% of what we do.
Okay.
At the other location, Sean and Jason, you know, they've got all their oak filled at this point. Those beers coming out are independent of what we're doing, but then they're also doing a lot of lagers. So that's where we usually try and coordinate a little bit better. They've got a Raukelis and a Vienna Lager coming out, and over here we've got a Schwartz and a Dunkel. So we're, you know, always making sure that we're not running into one another with
and
those.
And it's got to be nice to send kegs over there too.
Yeah, you know, vice versa. Just to get like, their beer over here.
Yeah, getting batches, that way you can move through stuff faster. That's always nice.
Well, we were talking about this earlier, and Sam Pecoraro.
I wish I could do that more at Slabtown, just to get more brands going.
Sam Pecoraro, head brewer here at the Pearl District location of Von Ebert. We were talking about this last segment, and I know it's not your beer, but why is the Agostini, what's Italian about it? What is an Italian pilsner? We were like, I don't know what this means, but it tastes delicious.
Yeah, so there's Thank you for baiting me into that one. Yeah, that's a big argument in the industry right now.
Well, I kind of mentioned earlier, what the hell is
an Italian
pilsner?
I didn't know I was baiting you. I'm just curious.
We'll blame Patrick for that.
Yeah, I'll take the heat.
So there's a bunch of breweries in Italy that started dry hopping pilsners and using newer European varieties of hops. And, you know, instead of calling it a dry hop pils, you know, there's a lot of breweries that like to refer to it as Italian style pils. They're a little bit more bitter, drier, higher hop aroma. That's Agostini's kind of our take on that.
And then what about the French Lachey, or no, the Pierre Lachey? French pils in the Italian style?
Yeah.
Now I feel like you're just effing with us.
We are.
Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely screwing with everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, so Pierre Lachey was and both of those beers are made at Glendevere by Sean and Jason. The French pils is just a French ingredient take on the Italian style pilsner.
Okay.
So there's Barba Rouge and Streusel Spalt. So more of a French hop character.
Cool.
In kind of talking about lagers and stuff, I mean, Mike and I have been talking about this for all of 2019, the year of the lager. I mean, I know brewers, they've always enjoyed brewing lagers and drinking lagers and stuff like that, but we've really seen the market really grab a hold of them. The average consumer is now looking at them, not as much as IPA. I mean, IPA is always still going to be king, but we're starting to see this lager trend. What do you attribute that to? Do you just attribute that to trends going in and out? Do you think we're in this area getting better at making lagers? Or what would you say why that's such a big thing? Because I don't think it's going anywhere. I think this craft lager thing is here to stay, and I know we're all excited about it. But I'm curious from a brewer's point of view, where you see this going?
Well, the first part of your question, where did it come from, or why did it happen? I think it's really got to, give a shout out to people like Heater Allen and Chuckanut and Wayfinder and people that are really focusing on these styles. People show up and, for lack of a better term, you're almost forced to drink them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it. Also, social media seems to be just really embracing this. There's that social media feedback loop where,
yeah,
somebody influential says this is good, and then all of a sudden everybody's willing to pay attention and try it. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I would love to have, 25 to 30% of our tap list all, German-inspired lagers or ales, and I think that's a great step in the right direction.
What do you think is next for 2020? Because we ask a lot of people this every year. It's like, oh, what's coming up next year? Well, we're almost at 2020. What's the next big – don't say hard cider – what's the next big trend, or hard seltzer, I should say?
I think I know it.
I really try not to predict this industry because I think I'm wrong every single time. I don't know. I guess some pushback from some mid-sized breweries against the hard seltzer. You look at what Deschutes doing with Modified Theory and trying to actually get back some of that shelf space. I'm not saying that's a great trend or something that everybody's excited about, but what do you think, Patrick?
I think the big style of beer in 2020 is going to be West Coast IPAs.
He thinks the bounce back's going to happen.
I would love that.
I actually think that's going to be the big thing. I think people are going to keep making hazies, and people like making hazies. But, I mean, it's tough these days to find new one-off IPAs and stuff. You just don't see them as often, and they're not as being packaged, at least in this city. We're seeing some cool stuff coming from other people. Bailbreaker's making a lot of really cool West Coast IPAs right now. We're seeing stuff come from outside the market, but I feel like in this town, we are kind of missing that from here to there, and I think it's because everyone's so focused on the consumer-driven at hazies that a lot of people are just getting sick of it, which brings me to this beer you are drinking right now. I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you know this, but the Willamette Weekly just voted your beer the 2019 Beer of the Year in Volatile Substance.
I did know that, and that was
congratulations
really
on
awesome.
That.
Yeah,
that
I was is super awesome, excited yeah. about that.
That is the kind of beer. So I've had that beer a couple times. you've had it on draft.
A couple.
I've had it on draft here a couple times, and then you guys started to can it. And to me, it was one of those, here we go. Finally, a classic West Coast IPA that we're going to be able, to get decently, consistently. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited that. And I'm curious where you are with that beer. Are you happy with where it is? Do you feel there's a lot to grow with it? Where are you with Volatile Substance?
Yeah. This beer is tricky because, when we wrote the idea and the concept for it, the mosaic that we need for this beer is, it's the hop bills, 25% Simcoe, 75% mosaic.
Okay.
And if we don't have the right mosaic, it's not volatile substance.
It's not very good.
No, it's not.
It's good, but it could be okay, but it's not the design.
Yeah, it's not the design.
So you're telling me this beer is based on the style of mosaic hop you get?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a
based on alpha acids, things like that?
No, more sensory. So the, descriptors we use for the particular lots.
Okay.
On the menu we write that we're going for, mixed berry, pine, resin. Honestly, this beer kind of took off, and we didn't have enough hops that were contracted and selected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a huge challenge the last several months is blending different lots and, buying Mosaic off of people and trying to recreate that. And, you know, now we're into getting into 2020 and we're totally prepared to make a lot more of the beer. And yeah.
Well, and Patrick mentioned,
excited for it.
Patrick mentioned canning there too. I mean, you guys have started to can more frequently. You're starting to send it out a little bit more. How's that process been going? Has there been challenges with it? How much more canning are you planning on doing? And like, how far are you willing to spread? You know, are you going just into like new season Zupans? Are you going to spread into like the regular supermarkets? Kind of what's the growth plan there?
Yeah, so we'll see. We're for 2020, the plan is every 4 weeks we'll release an IPA. We have four IPAs that we're going to be rotating through. So volatile substance, haze hop. I guess that's a hazy pale ale, but still falls into the hoppy category.
Yeah, yeah.
Saybridge is our dry IPA. Mm-hmm. And then Sector 7, our hazy IPA. So, you know, volatile will come out three times this year. It's really, really dependent on distribution sales. We've only released three beers at this point, so we're not, you know, fully certain how, you know, where they're going to sell or how quickly.
Is it exciting because there's Von Ebert beer in cans, or is it exciting because we want this all the time?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd love to sell a ton of it out of our, you know, actual tap rooms. You know, for obvious reasons.
For
everybody
sure,
makes
right.
more money when you sell it yourself. But, you know, if a ton of it's going to distribution, yeah, I'd love to be into those stores.
When you told me the four beers, I know all four of those beers. And that's so exciting to me because I feel, again, Mike kind of alluded to this. I mean, you guys are like 2 years old, but you feel like you're 5 years old, 6 years old. And I feel so many times breweries.
I feel like I'm 50.
I feel like so many breweries at your age are, you know, I don't want to throw anybody into the bus or call anybody out, that they love the one-offs. They always want to do one-offs and a new package and a new label. And then what's new? And that always concerns me. I feel like you should have core brands to get your name out there and keep it on the streets. Otherwise, people will just get lost. And I love that. I know all four of those beers. And that's not because I know you. That's because I drink the beers here. Like the Sabraj, which I love that you call the dry IPA. I caught that.
That's what it says on the menu, too.
Well, yeah, I know. That's not what it used to say. And Sector 7 is just that classic haze. And I actually had a haze hop the other day, a pale ale. My Cerveza friends were like, you should try this, Patrick. And I was like, don't. No, you know I don't like that crap. And I tried it. It was pretty damn good.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
That's, you know me. You know I hate those hazy stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that beer was pretty solid.
Yeah, Eric gets all the credit for that.
Well, then give it to him.
Fully made that recipe.
Did you used to call the Sabraj Brut IPA? Is that what the joke is? Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah, that's kind of become a word that makes beers not sell very well.
Yeah. It does not move things on the market. I think dry is fine. There was one time.
It's accurate.
Yeah, I think we traded you guys a keg of Wanderlust for your Christmas party, and you gave us a keg of that Sabraj, and we put it on, and we were digging it. We were loving it.
I'm good. Glad you liked it.
I love dry IPAs.
I have not been a huge fan of I will say dry IPAs to follow the trend.
Well, the problem is you were drinking Brut IPAs. Yes. That stuff's garbage.
I was drinking Brut IPAs, yeah. I wanted to follow up talking about hazies. So both of us neither of us are really big fans of hazies. We found some that we've liked here and there, but I think maybe I'm wrong with this. I feel like we've slightly moved past the like craze where everyone was making hazies all the time, and it was just like, you have to have a hazy beer, and if you don't, you're not doing something right. How did you guys approach that? Because we've talked to a couple different brewers, and they've all had different ideas for it. Like, oh, I didn't really want to make a hazy, but we had to. Or you grabbed the bull by the horns and made 18 hazies. I mean, some breweries change their entire tap list to be, like, 90% hazy based on that. Obviously, you guys have not done that. You've got, four beers on right now that are considered hazy. What was your approach to doing that, to taking on that craze?
I think two-part. One, find that balance. Like you said, you know, I really like West Coast IPAs, and I like pale ales and, you know, occasional Imperial IPA. So finding that balance within the tap list and just having that, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 beers that, you know, if somebody wants to come in and drink that, we do have something for them. I forgot the second part. What was your
approach when you were brewing those hazy IPAs?
Like,
what did you want out of them?
Yeah, and then also, you know, I guess build them within our own vision, so not have something that's, you know, very back sweetened and not drinkable. You know, I prefer to always drink beers that are you know, I can have two or three pints of. So, you know, making hazies that are, I don't want to call them dry, but
they're not juice
not
pumps.
Overly sweet. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. That was the one
and,
thing
and
that.
And then if we are using fruit in them to, you know, balance the fruit.
That was always the thing that I struggled with in the peak of the haze craze was getting what looked like pulpy orange juice, right? It was like, is this still beer? And the answer, of course, is yes, it's still beer. But it was just like, this is not what I'm looking for. Like, give me a little bit more hop flavor. I understand that I think some people probably liked it because, well, they didn't like the bitterness of hops, right? Some people come in and drink it and they're like, just give me something with no hops in it at all. So that probably appealed to them a little bit more. But it felt like, at least to me, that it wasn't really beer. I don't know. I don't know if that just sounds weird to say.
But I just always kind of felt like in so many of these hazies, you're using so much hops. Like what your poundage per barrel is, I know that's like a trendy thing to say, but it's, you know, a real measurement. The poundage per barrel is just, that's so expensive. And what are you really getting out of it? Like, is 7 pounds per barrel really getting you that much flavor? I like that. Sam just quietly shrugs. and I mean, it might, I mean, I'm no brewer, but I feel like I've had things that are down to only 2 to 3 pounds a barrel, and you get more hop character than you do with something with 7 pounds. I mean, I know some of it's yeast derived. I don't know how much you guys focus on yeast, if that's a main point of your hazies or if it's the hop character. I just tried the atmospheric phenomenon, and that's just like galaxy punching me in the face. So, I mean, knowing you, I imagine you want hops to be the prominent flavor in anything that you're going to slap the words I, P, and A on.
I don't have anything to add to
that. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I don't have any more questions. You got anything left, or you want to go to Beer of the Week?
No, I am good. Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Do you want to pick a beer?
I got one. How far do the Bills go?
Oh, that's right. You're a big Bills fan.
In the playoffs?
Yeah. You can win a game, right?
I mean, I think we can roll with anybody, but
you go to Houston and beat the Texans?
I mean, the only time we got a beatdown this year was against Philly. Yeah. I think every other game we pretty much kept ourselves in.
There you go.
You haven't beaten a lot of the good teams, though, on the schedule.
Yeah.
Look at this troll over here.
Sure, but, I mean, the good
are
teams.
Are you from Buffalo?
So we have 5 losses?
Yeah.
5 losses. 2 to New England.
Yep.
1 to the Ravens.
Yep.
I mean.
There you go.
I mean, I'd say that, you know, Philly, and then what was the 5th loss? I don't know. Either way, I feel like the teams that we have lost to are, you know, top.
They're
tier.
Definitely good teams. Yeah. Are you from Buffalo originally?
Yeah.
I went to Syracuse. So.
Oh, nice.
Close enough.
So why are you hating? Why
because
don't you be nice?
I have a lot of friends who are Bills fans, and it's really fun to poke fun.
Oh.
Well, it's easy to poke fun.
It is easy to poke fun.
Bills Mafia has adopted me to a slight extent, so I stick up for the Bills Mafia.
Bills Mafia hates me because I like to poke fun, because I do it with my friends all the time. I'm like, you got like it's cute, right? Like the Bills are good. I'm not going to say they're not good. Obviously, they're a playoff team. They clinched the playoffs, double digit wins. But you know, the Bills are the Bills, right? It's easy. It's like low hanging fruit.
Hey, I didn't say we were going to the Super Bowl.
Well, I didn't ask that. I didn't ask that either. I was like, you can win a game, right? Yeah. You can win a game.
It's possible. All
right.
Do you have a beer that you would like to do for Beer of the Week, or do you want us to choose from what we've been having, or what you thinking?
What are you in the mood for?
Well, we usually choose our favorite from the day, which is going to be tough, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed all of them.
We had Agostini Pills from the can. Obviously, we had Volatile. I liked Googly Eyes a lot. You liked...
I liked the I Should Have Been a Cowboy and the Certain Demon Poetry.
Any of those sounding good for you for Beer of the Week?
Well, it sounds like you're really divided, so how about I pick something completely different?
Go for it.
Steal you off.
Do it.
How about Grand Hardy, the Nitro Milk Stout?
Oh, done. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that.
I'm dark beer guy, so go for
it. Plus, we can talk Nitro versus CO2.
Yes.
Sounds
exactly.
Good.
That's next here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Beer of the Week time here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. And Sam Head Brewer here is kind enough to stick around for the Beer of the Week, which he chose today, which is the Grand Hardy Nitro Milk Stout with lactose. I'm so happy you chose this stout. I'm a big dark beer guy. It's my go-to. You mentioned you like to have 2 or 3 of a pint. I could have 2 or 3 of any stout anytime, let's go. So I'm very excited about this.
I like that you put lactose on the menu. I had to put lactose on the menu, too. Ben was like, make sure people know that has lactose. And I was like, why, man? Who cares? Oh, right, vegans. Those damn vegans.
Also people that are lactose intolerant.
Yeah. Maybe that's, you don't want to get them sick.
Is your guys' beer vegan?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Not, I think only the kids at Modern Times. I think Matt and his kids are at Modern Times. They have vegan beer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's like a fish oil in like almost all beer, right?
Like the pill?
No.
That you take for heart health?
No.
No, there's a kettle.
It's like an enzyme, yeah.
A kettle finding that has a...
I was making a little joke. Yeah, I didn't know that, but I was making a joke. I figured it wasn't the pill.
That would be funny. We just drop fish oil pills in the beer. You don't know what it does, man.
So why did you choose this beer? What about this made you want it for Beer of the Week?
I'm pretty proud of the, it's the first shot at this recipe, and I think it turned out nice. And I think with the nitroing a full batch, I think it's pouring really nicely and looks cool. And I don't know. You hadn't tried it, so.
I had not tried it,
I was just trying to make you try it.
I do enjoy.
Fair enough.
I mean, I do enjoy, as not a stout, heavy stout drinker, I like Irish stouts because I like the dryness of Irish. But there is something nice.
I'm trying to break him into drinking
about a milk stout. I mean, I just like the lower ABV stouts. I don't want something too big. Like, I love the Schwartz and all that, like the dark lagers. Dunkel, things like that. I mean, I'm okay with, like, roastiness and a little more bold flavors. It's the body, and it's just the heaviness of it totally. This is nice. I don't like nitro beers.
Well, I'm glad I picked this
one. Yeah, I like bubbles. And I'm always curious, what goes in the thought process behind choosing whether or not to nitro this or not?
Honestly, I think history.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it.
I mean, and people still, I mean, I can't believe somebody walks in. Do you have any nitro beers on tap? I'm like, no, get out. But I guess you're right. I mean, it is a traditional thing, especially with this style.
Yep. I also think, with a lot of CO2, this beer is quite sweet.
Mm.
This beer is really full bodied, and I feel like the nitro helps, accentuate that. Where with CO2, I mean, the body would be completely different. So,
well, it is.
I think it works well.
I mean, to me, maybe this is not the right way to say it, but it almost tastes like I'm having like a beer float without the ice cream in it. Like, it's super creamy, it's super rich. I love how this is my type of beer. It's very, very rich. I love rich beer. And to me, it's like, it's not overly alcoholic, obviously, because we're not doing barrel aged stuff or anything, but it's everything that I want in a stout. And I love nitro beers. I'm not like Patrick.
I was going to ask if you like nitro.
I do like nitro beers. I didn't know that would maybe change the sweetness of it if you were carbonating it. That's interesting. But yeah, this is really good. If this is your first time doing this, wow. Great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Is that kind of what you were going with a little bit? Like the ice cream float kind of feel, or?
Yeah,
is that just kind of the way my mind is, or my palate's taking it?
Actually, I forget what I wrote on the menu, but okay. That's an old menu. It doesn't have it on there, but I wrote like milk duds.
Mm.
Definitely, I don't know. I guess that was a descriptor we were going after.
Desserty, yeah.
Chocolatey, milky, malty.
Mm-hmm. I get that for sure.
I still can't get past the part where you said, or people are lactose intolerant.
Yeah, well, when you were saying that, I was like, allergies? Hello?
You know, we might not have something for everybody, but we try and not make
kill
people
them
sick.
Yeah. Like, you got to say if it's got nuts in it, right? You have
exactly,
to say
yeah.
if it's got nuts.
What is kind of like for you guys the next frontier for stuff that you want to experiment with to kind of get out there? Because I'm noticing at the top of your menu here, you've got a lot of interesting. I don't want to say one-off styles, but not the typical styles. You got a Creek up there. You've got a Kvik.
Yep.
You've got the Tart Ale. You've got the mixed culture beer. I mean, you've got a ton of interesting styles up there. What's like the next frontier for you guys to try to perfect or just to release?
I think boosting the lager section of our menu and having that, like I said earlier, 20-30% of what we sell, and getting people to buy that so that it's justified rather than everything sitting around,
right?
And, being on tap for too long. I think that, and then really pushing the boundary on our IPAs. I really want to be known for you know, at this location, IPA variants and then German lagers. And I feel like, you know, doing new, cool, interesting IPA things that maybe other people haven't explored yet.
I was going to ask in relation
and
to that.
And I'm not going to give those away.
That's fine. Yet. That's fine. I wasn't trying to steal anything. I was just curious. When you guys are looking out for certain types of hops, right? So me on this podcast, I'm more just the regular guy, the consumer. I see hop names. I recognize the most common ones like Mosaic and Strata and Chinook and Citra and stuff. I'm seeing all these hop variants now where I'm like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what flavors this is supposed to bring. I know that there's the Southern Hemisphere hops that have become really popular from Australia, New Zealand down there, but how do you choose which new hops that you're going to be putting into these beers or experimenting with at all? Like, what is that process behind choosing, whether it's an experimental hop or I don't know if there's one on the menu right now that I haven't heard of before, but like Enigma. I hadn't heard of Enigma hops before. Like, how do you find these and choose them, and how do they fit into your recipes?
Well, I think there's, you know, it's really easy to just take a hop and throw it into a beer and see what comes out. Like Enigma, that's more or less what we did. we're not contracted for Enigma. We don't have a ton of it. So it was fun to just play around on one recipe. But then, you know, if we're going to contract for certain hops and buy a lot of them, we make sure that we can actually select. And, you know, we know what farm it's coming from. We know that we're going to be able to get all the same lot. And we're going to be able to use that for the next year and, you know, hopefully build a relationship and continue to get that quality of hop.
Is there a type, though, that, like, have you ever picked a hop one-off that you've experimented with and you've just been like, eh, that's not going to fit?
Yeah, definitely, but I'm not going to throw
them under the bus. I'm not saying throw them under the bus. I was just curious how often that happens. And then, like, does that mean that you, again, this is a very novice question to me, but do you brew like just a tester batch? Like, is it a small batch where you just brew, or do you go fully into the bright tank and you brew it and you're like, oh crap, this is not as good as I wanted.
No, that's a great question. I mean, we'll, if it's a new hop that we don't know anything about, we'll definitely rub it and do sensory on it first. A lot of that's to see, you know, generally what is this hop all about? Also, we'll be looking for, you know, off flavors or characteristics, you know, is the pellet, is it waxy and hard and not, you know, in good condition? If it's something that we're, you know, happy with and think it can work, we'll come up with a concept and then usually do a 10-barrel batch. So we have a 10-barrel, 20-barrel, and 30-barrel fermenters, so we'll usually start on the smallest size.
Do you got a hop that you just are obsessed with right now? What's kind of talking to you right now?
Oh, man, this is going to ruin my street cred.
Yeah.
I really like all the, like, Sabro relatives.
Yeah. I think why is that going to ruin your street cred?
Everybody always talks them all the time.
Dude, everybody wants to talk. Yeah.
We'll bleep it. Don't worry.
Sorry about that. Everybody wants to talk trash because it's fun to talk trash. Like, yeah. I actually think a well-made Brut IPA is pretty cool. But for some reason, the name just didn't sell. I think it's okay to like the Sabro stuff. I had a Sabro. I feel like when that first came out, I had a Sabro featured IPA from Freem that I thought was pretty solid.
They made a few that I thought were fantastic.
I just think like with anything in hops, you know, like good recipe and good use of the hop is really all it takes. There's no bad hop unless you're, you know, like beep. And then it's just about how you use it. But that's kind of what you've been digging lately is some of those variants.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of room there, especially for blending into you know, more tropical forward.
Cool.
IPAs.
What's the hop you've used the most in your career? That, like, maybe it's not your favorite or your most common one, but what's the one that you find fits your beer the most? I mean, it could be as simple as Citra, right?
Citra, Simcoe, Mosaic. It's got to be one of those.
Yeah. The Holy Trinity. Yeah.
I mean, is that what that's considered, the Holy Trinity?
I mean, pretty much, right? Mosaic, Citra.
Yeah.
For sure. And then Simcoe. Simcoe's pretty polarizing. Some people don't like Simcoe.
We've talked about that on the podcast before, that some people think it tastes like car grease or something, like some weird, like, mechanical flavor or something,
like,
right?
Too diesel.
Yeah.
Petrol-y.
Yeah.
I like Simcoe.
And then Patrick's been obsessed with the Strata hop this year as well.
I've been enjoying the Strata.
Yeah
nice. Now that that's got a little more acreage and farms are dialing that in. I'd like to see what that
crop looks like in a couple of years.
All right, Sam Pecoraro, thank you so much for sitting down.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you for the beer of the week as well, Grand Hardy Nitro Milk Stout. And we've had we talked about on the podcast, we've had basically 75% of the menu today on the podcast.
We're all over the place.
We're all over the place. That's good. If you have yet to come down to the Pearl District to come to this place, please do. It is fantastic beer and great food, and it's huge, and you will always find a spot to sit, which is fantastic. And they got football on right now, like we talked about, so come watch your team on Sunday and come watch the playoffs. It's a great place. I'm so glad to come out to do this, too.
I sneak in for Timbers games. This is my Timber pre-funk spot. Yeah. I like it here.
I sneak in every once in a while. If I just come down here, I'll park in that garage across the street. I'll grab a pint and then go do whatever shopping I have to do. Thank you for having us out.
Thanks so much.
Not sure when our next episode's going to be. We're having some issues at the station again.
Again.
And hopefully this will be released normal time. We'll be back with you next week. But we have another style podcast coming up for you. And then our next on location, it's going to be after the new year, so you're going to be more free. Let's commit to doing the Oregon City episode, okay?
Okay.
Dave's been talking to us about this for like...
Call the homeboy Dave Fleming. You know Dave
months.
Fleming, right?
He wants to bring us back to Oregon City to all the breweries down there since he moved back.
A personal tour guide.
I think that's a great idea and would make for some awesome listening.
Yes.
Dave's awesome. I love him.
Yeah, we went out to Lucky Lab and talked to him, and he was like, oh, let's go to Oregon City. I was like, hell yeah, that was like 5 months ago. So we'll probably get that done pretty soon too. So thank you guys so much for listening. Remember, subscribe, rate, review wherever you find us. Instagram.com/beersandus is where you'll find our Instagram posts, and then you can find the podcast Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Radio.com, Stitcher, Omni, 1080thefan.com.
Can I say it? See you next decade.
Oh, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Whoa!
We'll see you then, guys.
Traces.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.